afraid of tear gas or rubber bullets.
Of course.
So why did you come out here?
Well, this is what I have to do.
No let up in Hong Kong protests. This is Monday, October 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, we take you to Los Angeles for a look at Asians in Hollywood. Although it is seen as a paradise by many, New Zealand is having its problems with climate change. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of protesters marched in Hong Kong on the 20th straight week of protest against what they see as Beijing's attempt to control their city. This week's protests were met with strong opposition by police who used water cannon and tear gas on the demonstrators. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Hong Kong.
Fury and fire on the streets of Hong Kong. Protests like these on Sunday have been constant for 4 months. Police did not authorize this most recent protest and have also outlawed face coverings at public gatherings. On Sunday, they moved swiftly to contain the demonstration with water cannon, tear gas, and arrests. The protesters' 5 demands include universal suffrage, an investigation of police violence, amnesties for protesters, and the full official withdrawal of the spark that lit the fire's dissent at the beginning of this year, and now withdrawn extradition bill that would allow mainland China to try people arrested in Hong Kong. Protesters say they're not backing down, even under police pressure.
I don't think it's illegal.
Are you afraid of tear gas or rubber bullets?
Of course.
So why did you come out here?
Well, this is what I have to do.
Protesters have directed their ire at specific targets: Beijing-friendly businesses, banks, and the city's expansive subway system, which protesters say has folded to pressure from the pro-Beijing Hong Kong administration by restricting services in the public transport-dependent city to try to stifle the protests. On Sunday, protesters also set up roadblocks, which they say is not vandalism, but self-defense.
Actually, we just keep trying to protect ourselves because, like, all the robots are trying to block the way the police, and so we can keep a protection for ourselves. So, like, it's not a violent act, and we are not, like, aiming for destroying things, but we are just protecting ourselves. Yeah.
The city's administration doesn't see it that way. They've called the protesters terrorists and arrested more than 2,300 people. And Chief Executive Carrie Lam has made clear she's not backing down from her position of not providing any concessions. So how does this end? The 2014 Umbrella Movement protests, which had similar aims, ended unsuccessfully after 79 days with the arrests of many protest leaders. This new movement is leaderless, making it harder to quash. Opposition lawmakers say the city's leadership holds the solution.
I think only our government can end this the situation. If she reply the 5 demands of the Hong Kong people as soon as possible, then most of us want to restore our normal life. Every weekend we have joined the protests, and so many younger people are hurt and arrested by the police.
But protesters say that won't deter them from taking to the streets next weekend and the weekend after that, and however long it takes. Anita Powell, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's leaders said Saturday the murder suspect, whose case inadvertently helped ignite the city's protest movement, wants to surrender to authorities in Taiwan. Carrie Lam told reporters that Hong Kong's government would actively follow up on a letter she received from Chen Tong-kai requesting help to give himself up. Chen is wanted by Taiwan authorities for allegedly killing his girlfriend during a trip to the self-ruled island last year. He was not sent back to face charges because there's no extradition agreement. He was, however, jailed in Hong Kong on money laundering charges and is due to be released this week. Lam has cited Chan's case as one of the main reasons that she wanted to close the loophole with proposed extradition amendments. But the proposal sparked massive protest over fears that they would put residents at risk of being sent into mainland China's Communist Party-controlled judicial system. We continue now. East Asian characters who have been part of Hollywood since the silent film era. They have been that, but the portrayal of Asian and especially Chinese characters in the history of U.S. movies has been described as problematic by many film scholars. But this is changing. Not only have Asian characters evolved over time, so have movie-going audiences. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
From this iconic Chinese theater in the heart of Hollywood to a famous old-time movie industry hangout named the Formosa Cafe, Hollywood has had a fascination with the Chinese culture and the Orient since the early days of the film industry.
Audiences were given this exotic glimpse of a land unknown to them. And I think it started there.
Filmmaker Arthur Dong produced a film on this topic and wrote a new book called Hollywood Chinese, where he says the movie industry's fascination with the Orient, especially in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, translated into problematic, one-dimensional Chinese characters.
I saw Chinese characters on screen, but they were always playing servants, coolies, laundrymen. And if they were women, they were prostitutes or servants.
And white actors played lead Chinese characters.
You had the main actors in yellowface.
Yellowface, meaning they actually literally yellowed up their skin. They usually slanted their eyes with prosthetics.
Are you so foolish as to believe that you can oppose the will of Fu Manchu?
They included the villain Fu Manchu, and in 1926, the character Charlie Chan debuted on the big screen. He was supposed to portray a more positive Asian American image.
He was smart and wise, but he was also very oriental in the worst sense, in that he was passive, he was quiet, he was smarter than anybody else, which is a good attribute, yes, but it was used in the stereotype way. And he spoke in broken English.
Caucasian characters played lead roles in the 1937 film The Good Earth, about rural Chinese farmers, even though Asian actors received parts in the film.
But it's overshadowed by this yellow-faced casting of the main actors. I think in its day, in the 30s, that was a norm. That's what Hollywood was doing.
But over the decades, Asian and Chinese Americans did find work in Hollywood, and a few earned a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But even recently, some movie fans have been critical on social media of Hollywood casting white actors in main roles they believe should have gone to an Asian actor.
You're cynical, I get it.
They include the 2015 film Aloha, where Emma Stone played Allison Ng, a character of Asian descent. But in 2018, Crazy Rich Asians hit the big screen, with a majority Asian cast, an Asian American director, and an Asian as one of the writers. The movie was a milestone.
The sensation of Crazy Rich Asians, both in its critical and box office success, is a sign that things are changing. Filmmakers are being nurtured, attitudes are being nurtured and strengthened, where we won't take that yellow face casting anymore, where we won't take that kind of whitewashing attitude of making an Asian character white.
Technology is also opening doors for Asian Americans to tell stories on their own terms.
We have so many more platforms, right? There's the Netflixes, there is the Amazon Primes and the Hulus.
With Asian Americans being the fastest growing racial group in the U.S., a new generation of Asian American artists can use the different digital platforms to tell stories without being boxed in to a stereotype. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Climate change, pollution, and fishing are causing irreversible damage to New England's marine environment, according to a new report. It states that many seabirds and marine mammals are at risk of extinction. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand's long coastline that stretches for about 15,000 kilometres is under increasing pressure from development, shipping and climate change. The Ministry for the Environment's report states that 90% of the country's seabirds and about a quarter of its marine mammals are threatened with extinction. The study asserted that 16% of New Zealand's fish stocks have been overfished. Agriculture and forestry, as well as urbanisation, are increasing the amount of sediment, chemicals and plastics flowing into the oceans and contaminating the coastline. New Zealand Secretary for the Environment is Vicky Robertson.
The sea is a receiving environment for what happens on the land. So our activities on land, from the mountains to the sea, are having an impact on what we're seeing in the marine environment. Growing cities, forestry, agriculture, all delivering increasing amounts of sedimentation.
The report also confirmed New Zealand's sea temperature had risen and was consistent with the global average. It also found sea levels were rising faster than before. There's a warning, too, that New Zealand can expect more frequent marine heat waves, similar to those in 2017 and 2018, and ocean acidification. For the first time, data from citizen scientists was used in the government report. Community groups were instructed about how to collect robust data. The next official marine environment report is due in 3 years. New Zealand is a grouping of islands in the South Pacific Ocean, southeast of Australia. It has a population of 4.5 million people. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Official Washington finds itself consumed by the twin crises of impeachment and Syria. President Donald Trump is trying to fend off congressional Democrats moving toward impeachment, even as he faces a fierce backlash from some Republicans over his decision to pull U.S. forces out of Syria. Trump is used to weathering political storms, but this one is particularly intense, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
At the White House, President Trump on the defensive over the pullout of U.S. troops from Syria.
We were supposed to be there for 30 days. We stayed for 10 years, and it's time for us to come home. We're not a policing agent, and it's time for us to come home.
Trump was already busy fending off a Democratic-led impeachment inquiry in Congress, spurred by his request to Ukraine to investigate political rival Joe Biden.
Impeachment. I never thought I'd see or hear that word with regard to me. Impeachment. I said the other day, it's an ugly word. To me, it's an ugly word.
With impeachment as a backdrop, tensions boiled over at a White House meeting with Democrats over Syria, including Congressman Steny Hoyer.
I have served with six presidents. I have been in many, many, many meetings like this. Never have I seen a president treat so disrespectfully a co-equal branch of the government of the United States.
The political pressure on the president over impeachment appears to be mounting, says analyst John Fortier.
The president's removal, the president's reputation afterwards is something that clearly he must be thinking about. But in terms of the way that the White House is reacting, I do think that they have a similar way of fighting all sorts of controversy. And it's not to back down, it's to really stand up and push back. And that's what we've been seeing.
Both sides in the impeachment inquiry are closely watching public opinion, says William Galston.
Republicans have to be very careful not to be seen as defending the indefensible. And if they take the position of denying that the president did anything wrong, I think that they're going to lose ground with the American people.
Trump has proudly cast himself as a political disruptor from the start. And there could be more to come as the impeachment battle unfolds, says historian Barbara Ann Perry.
So far, he has bombarded and exploded, I guess I say, all the norms and all of the precedents of the previous 44 administrations. So nothing to me seems out of bounds for this particular president.
No matter how the impeachment battle turns out, one likely result is a deeper partisan divide, says Thomas Schwartz.
It will probably polarize the country even more. I think you'll have a very divided country in a way similar to what you saw in 1999 and 2000 after the Clinton impeachment and the divisive election of 2000.
All of this coming as the country prepares for the next presidential election in 2020. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
How would you like a long time on an airplane? Australia's Qantas Airlines on Sunday completed the first nonstop commercial flight from New York City to Sydney, which was used to run a series of tests to assess the effects of ultra-long-haul flights on crew fatigue and passenger jet lag. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner touched down in Sydney early Sunday morning after a flight of 19 hours and 16 minutes, the world's longest. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, our managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Ira Mellon in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.